Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
This week's episode of Ringside is sponsored by The Gray Goat. I don't know about y'all, but I'm ready for spring. And with that, cooking outside on the grill. Level yourself up to the level of grill master by using The Gray Goat's rubs and spices to make your meals great. Go to www.graygoatbbq.com to order their variety pack and use the code RINGSIDE10 at checkout to save 10% off your order. Your stomach and family will be impressed by your grilling skills. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and finally, I'm joined by someone whose milkcation is over, Danielle Caroli. What's up?
Whoop, whoop. What's going on?
Congratulations on most likely winning our little contest here. So that's great for you.
Yes, though, I mean, it's not over yet. I only have 3 does kitted. You still have 1 doe. The tides could turn.
Well, I think the caveat to all of it is that it's still bittersweet because you have a lot of balls running around in that kitting pen.
Yeah, I don't know. Am I batting 100 or 1,000? Is that how that goes?
You're batting 1,000 for buck kids, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, it's so fun. I'm loving life.
Well, the current count is you have 5 buck kids from 3 different does.
Yes.
So that's fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. I was not expecting that much of a buck year, but the first one had bucks, and then the second one had a single, and I had kind of expected that she was going to have a single. And so, okay. And then the third one, I thought for sure she was having twins, but then the giant kid came out, and sure enough, it was a buck. So it all makes sense in hindsight, but we are 5 for 5 with buck kids. So yay.
I kind of feel bad and partly at fault for your buck kid woes because your first 3 buck kids came. And I think I either, when we were on the phone or when we were texting, I said, ooh, a ringside buck year, ?
Yep. It's fine. It's kind of weird because these are all younger does. And so it's pretty much okay, there's 2 I think I'm going to market as bucks, but the others I don't think I'm going to register them. And so with that, I'm like, oh, I have 5 potential weathers right now. And I think I actually have homes for all of them if I sell them as weather. So it's not that big of a deal. I don't think I was planning one of the does I was planning on keeping a doe kid from if she had one, but the others, it was all buyer reservations. And so now I have to send that email saying, sorry, I don't have a doe kid for you, and figure out where we go from there. And with my kidding season kind of broken up into 2 chunks, it does play a little bit of a, or create a little bit of a twist, because the buyers then have to decide if they're going to wait for a May kid or roll over for next year or all those fun things that could happen. And so it's not like, give me another week and I'll have 20 other kids possibilities on the ground. I kind of feel personally, and I know that's not true because I'll have another kidding season in a month or a month and a half, but I almost feel like once we get through this, this is a separate entity than my second part of it. So we'll see. We'll see. But what's going on with you?
What's going on with me? I have a doe kidding Sunday tomorrow for this recording, obviously yesterday for people that are listening. So if there's a picture of a Guernsey kid for the episode post, then you know, or a Nubian kid, then you know it was a buck kid. If there's a picture of an Oberhasli, you know it was a doe kid.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Why do you get to post the doe kid pic? I could still have doe kids. Why do you get to take over that part?
Are you going to have a doe kid tomorrow?
I don't know, but I still have another day. Whatever. It's fine. If you have a doe kid, you can celebrate your doe kid. We're good.
I mean, yeah, I think it would be a worthy celebration after the year I've had.
Yeah. No, you can celebrate. It's fine.
Okay.
Celebrate. Nope, we didn't say singing.
Oh, all right. Well, let's not celebrate yet because it hasn't happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides that, we're just milking and feeding kids and surviving, trying to get some sleep, but that's come and go here.
Yeah. What is that? I don't know what that is anymore.
Exactly. So. But yeah, we're just kind of hanging out and doing our thing and anticipating another kidding and moving along, getting ready for show season.
Very cool. It's exciting. Yeah. Exciting times. You're surviving kidding season 2023.
I am. I need to get one of those stickers, actually, and put it on my I'll probably put it on my show box.
Yeah, I'll send you some. I got to send you a few, so this way you have some.
Okay.
Add it to my list.
Anything else of note for your herd before we move on to add good news?
No, anything else for your herd before we move on to add good news?
Nothing that I want to share quite yet, so okay. We'll move right on to add good news.
Cool, what's going on there?
Well, the schedule for Nationals in Redmond, Oregon has come out, and you can see what judges were assigned to what and what days. The breeds that I noticed off the bat was Oberhasli and Recorded Grades, the last ones being shown at Nationals, so that's cool. I guess the Oberhasli will have time to sit in their pens and recoup from however far they came to the show, and it'd be great. But yeah, I think it's a nice schedule. I like the judges for the breeds. It's going to be neat for everybody that will be exhibiting there.
No, I'm excited. I saw that, and I'm already planning the live stream party or whatever that can happen when those breeds show. I might even be, depending on a few things, I might be even streaming the whole show all week long and just watching. And whoever wants to pop in can pop in. But I'm already planning the live stream party because
I thought you were going.
I can't attend this year.
Oh, man. You went from, I want to go to Wine Country to now Wine Country is going to be on your couch in the Ringside studio.
Yes, exactly. And this way I don't have to worry about I can drink responsibly from the comfort of my studio, but I'm already trying to figure out how I'm going to stream it, if I can steal a projector or something and we can just use an HDMI cable and throw it up on a wall or yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But
dude, I'll be there. I'll be there.
Listen,
sure.
It's going to be
at least the Monday.
I have to look at the schedule and figure out, you know, all the fun stuff that now comes with schedule stuff. But I think I'm going to be trying to stream it, and
we can stream live on YouTube.
What are you talking about? Oh, we can stream us streaming.
Yes.
And our commentary.
Oh, it'd be perfect.
I don't know if they'd want it, but we'll see. We can play with it. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out, but
if
it could be cool.
If you want to see Danielle and I doing a play-by-play of the national show on YouTube live, let us know. And I think it'd be great. You know, somebody accidentally drops the collar of a kid and they have to start chasing it. And Kurt Schnipke, and
oh, just wait a call.
And do the play by play.
Oh my God, he's never going to come on our podcast again now.
Please. He loves us. He's the bestest. So, yeah, no, it would be pretty cool. So,
yeah, no, I think. Let's put our heads together and figure out what we can do for it, because we can definitely, at the very least, hold a ringside viewing party, and then we'll figure out where we go from there. So, and anybody who's local is welcome to attend, or maybe we'll have some kind of virtual viewing party. We'll figure it out. We got a few months.
Yeah. We would probably have to talk to somebody at ADGA and make sure that they approve us doing that, because, you know, it's pay to win to watch that, you know, so.
Well, it would probably be like a chat or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
We'll get creative.
Well, keeping on with the ADGA news, the postal ballot 2022-23-3, the linear appraisal ballot that was out. That was withdrawn by the sponsors. So there was a lot of good information that was put out there, a lot of discussions from the posts I've seen online. So there's probably going to be changes in the future, just not now. And I think that's fair, since everybody's already paid and signed up for linear appraisal. So that got kind of mucky as far as if people were going to have to pay more, even though they already signed up and paid, or didn't pay but signed up, and that. So definitely looking forward to seeing the changes that will be made probably at convention this year for that program, and hoping that it somehow can turn a profit or just be even. So, yeah. Well, Danielle, I think we should get right into our topic here for the week. We left off last week's episode talking about how to market kids or animals. And the last thing we were talking about was the resources to use as far as like Facebook and all that stuff. And also different ways to generate sales. So we'll continue right into that conversation now. And let's just kind of crunch right into it. When creating posts for a sales ad, what do you think generates success from that ad, Danielle?
I was going to say, well, do you want to take this one first?
I can.
Go for it. Let's start with that.
Okay. So when I create a post for a kid, we'll just say kids, what I do is I put down the information that is needed. Nothing more, nothing less. Usually what I'll do is say Buck XYZ is available. This is what I like about them. Nice top line, nice feet and legs, nice depth, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll continue with that with the pertinent information as far as dam, sire, if there was any notable wins or national show placings or anything like that. I'll put that in there, LA scores, and put information. I will not, boast any information that might not be accurate. I want to stress that if you're going to put down information, make sure it's 100% accurate, so you don't look like you're lying about your animals, because people, believe it or not, do check up on that information that is on that post.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to add anything before we go to the next bullet point for this portion of the topic?
No, I think that's good. I want to add a little bit. And sometimes there'll be descriptions of what I like about the animal as well. Pictures are always good. I think sometimes pictures are better than your description sometimes too. And making sure those pictures are nice pictures definitely helps a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and since, yes, pictures definitely speak volumes for these animals that we're posting, but is there, when we're writing down the synopsis of what the animal is there such a thing as too much information that we're giving?
I think sometimes too much information causes the animal to get lost, because particularly when you're on different platforms, let's say you're on, I mean, goodness, if you're on Instagram, the amount of information that somebody's going to want to read is going to be much less than if they were on Facebook even. But even when you're on Facebook, are they really, is your buyer really going to want to read a whole 10-page essay about this animal? I mean, I know when I buy animals, I like to do my research, but I think typically I like to do the research myself, and maybe that's just me, but I like to kind of go back and look at pedigrees and go through adgenetics myself. So maybe that brief summary of what's in that pedigree and different things like that, but you just have to find that balance between what's too much to put out there and what's enough, because are you losing a buyer's attention by putting too much wording out there, I think, or are you short and sweet to the point, highlighting the really important things, the selling points of this animal, maybe the dam's stellar linear appraisal score, or that the buck is the sire of 3 permanent champion does already at 4 years old. You know, what are those key points that really are going to sell that animal versus just get lost in the details? Like, who was 10th here and who was a grand champion here? And then 20 years ago, this happened. It's not, it's maybe not like, there's a fine line, I think.
Oh, there is. I mean, I've seen plenty of posts where someone will say, Hay Creeks. In the Hay Creek so-and-so in the pedigree. And then you look at epigenetics and it's like the great-great-grandsire. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, I'm sure it impacted your line, but you have all this other stuff in front of it that it might not be very pertinent to what the animal's going to do. I will give an example of what I think is probably the longest you'll want to go, and I'll just put myself right out there. For one of my posts this year of a buck kid that I've sold, I always say up for discussion, because if you say for sale on the dreaded Facebook, you're going to get flagged and potentially you can lose your farm page if you do it too often. So you want to say like up for discussion, for your consideration, blah, blah, blah. You want to say the breed of the animal, American Oberhasli buck kid. Sex is good too. Very important. You want to put the name out there. In this case, Hilaire Farm RTO Calcifer. I put what I like about him. He's sharp. He's long. He's level. He's got the right parts and the pedigree to back it up. Simple as that. Boom. One sentence. Done. Damn. Hilaire Farm, blah, blah, blah. 7th place milking yearling of 2022 Aga National Show. Then I say what I like about her. She's long. She's got a nice dab. She's matured nicely. Love the length. Blah, blah, blah. And then sire, overboard return Oz, has excellent general appearance, his dam, blah, 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 the 3rd place, 3rd udder, and 3-year-old class at national show. Did I say what I like about the buck? And then just a closing statement. Don't miss out on your chance to own this animal. And then a link to AdvoGenetics, followed by pictures of the animal. I know a lot of people do not like pictures of their goat drinking from a bottle, but I have it there because he's not collar trained yet. He's a kid. He's like 8 days old in this picture. Pictures of the dam, pictures of a rear udder, pictures of the sire, pictures of his dam. Bada bing, bada boom, done. I think that's about as long as you want to go before you're going to lose the attention. I mean, just reading that real quick, I'm sure we lost the attention of 20 people that were driving on their way to work and were just like, oh, phasing out.
Right. And it's one of those things that as a buyer, I look at it that some of those aspects of that pedigree are going to be more important to me than others. And so I think that's when you start doing your own research. So for instance, let's say you post that this is the sire, and I might need to see, okay, if this buck is the perfect fit for my herd, I want something that comes from a long line of animals that are going excellent in back. Well, excellent in back is semi-obscure in terms of that advertisement aspect of it. I mean, sometimes you'll see an animal that the breeder will highlight, this animal went excellent in back, which is great. That's a selling point for that animal. But as a buyer, let's say I'm looking for this consistency, you're not going to necessarily see that in the ad, but I'm going to have to do my research anyway and find that because ultimately I know what'll work well for my program. So giving the option to dive deeper is, I think, the best bet of here's information, here's where you can find more information, whether it's a pedigree link to or links to the animals pages on a website, photos, etc. All good things to showcase and use.
And I, since I touched on the words that can flag a post on Facebook, especially because there's supposed to be no animal sales on Facebook, just in case people didn't know. What are some words that you use, Danielle, for your posts to kind of get around those posts from getting flagged?
So I think the problem is particularly prevalent in groups versus your farm pages. Sometimes your farm pages can get flagged, but I will say, in my experience, posting on groups instead of your personal profile or a farm page is definitely more restrictive in the wording you can use. It's very easy to kind of be creative. Available for a new home. Sometimes I just use available, or there's, you know, it's different things like that. I wouldn't necessarily say for sale, but make it obvious that they're for sale without saying that. I don't know. You have a list of words, I know. So what do you think are some words to avoid?
My biggest, the to avoid is always just for sale. Mm-hmm. But people get fun with it. They'll say lawnmower up for grabs, weed eater up for grabs, for your consideration. Just available is a good one. For these groups, when you're sharing your posts, I would definitely be mindful of the rules of the group. I mean, there's some groups where that you have to put your town that you live in, how much you're asking, but when you put how much you're asking, you're supposed to use the whatever numbers
emojis.
From the emojis. Yeah. Some just don't want you to put any of that and just share the post and say buck kid available or whatever, PM for more info. So it just depends on each group's rules. It used to be a year or two ago where you could share your post, like you hit the share button, share to group, and it would just list all of your groups that you're part of, and it had like check marks next to it, and you could click each one, and so you could share to like 12 by just filling in that blue check mark or whatever it was, and then you hit share, and it shares to all of them. Well, now you got to go to individual ones, probably because people were spamming. I know I was spamming these sales ads, but they weren't following the group rules because they were just clicking those buttons.
I've also noticed that over the past probably year, the way the Facebook algorithm has started working is unless you are you can join all the groups you want on Facebook, but unless you are actively interacting with that group and searching for that group, it's not going to pop up on your newsfeed. So you're not going to see it very often. You're not going to see the notifications unless you're constantly going in, checking or searching, or you click as a social media user that you want to get notifications from this group or see it more, those different options. So it is something that I know a lot of people are definitely using groups still, and it's a great resource that we have, and you can get your localized groups of goats for sale in your region, goats for sale in your state, farm animals for sale in your region, you know, those different things that might be where your niche is for those buyers that you're looking for these animals. But you also have to be aware that things are shifting and it's probably not as effective as it used to be a couple of years ago.
Exactly. Keeping on with that, what are some of the important things to remember? And I ask this because I'm calling myself out just left and right here. That same buck sale ad that I just read off a couple minutes ago, I was just eager to get it out there and put it out there in the stratosphere, get this buck kid sold. That I did. I put all the pertinent information, but I forgot to put one, American Oberhosley, and two, that he was a buck kid. And it didn't. It took either a message from you or Grace Toy to be like, "Hey, John, what you got there?"
Right. Well, because you had given it a name and everything. I don't think it was me. I don't think I noticed it. But you had given this buck kid a name. You had touted all these things. But however you had worded it did not suggest whether it was a doe or a buck. And so here you had this for sale ad and nobody knew what they were trying to get. If they were looking for their next herd sire or they were looking for their next show doe. So it is important to list that it is a buck. If it is a buck, if it is able to be registered, that is a big one too, that you want to make sure is out there, particularly in breeds that maybe don't, that do have strong unregistered markets too, or maybe it's more important if it is something that you're not willing to register. Maybe you definitely want to highlight that as well. Because that'll change your market pretty quickly.
Do you put your doe's milk records, like just like the highlights of the milk records on each post, or do you just not even bother unless somebody asks?
It depends. For the most part, I'll probably throw a milk record up there. Usually I'll throw a milk record up there, particularly the last milk record they have, or it might be where they peaked poundage wise more than their milk record. Because sometimes I feel that there's people who are chasing the 3,000 pounds or 4,000 pounds. I mean, Nubians, we're not really talking 4,000 pounds, 5,000 pounds, but in other breeds, you are. There's people who are chasing that, but the general population, when they're milking goats, is not thinking, first of all, that entire lactation. They're thinking usually probably more in gallons than pounds, because if you're not weighing it yourself, you don't know that 8.125 or 8.5 or something like that is the weight of a gallon of milk. So it's kind of hard to imagine 3,000 pounds. What is that? But I also, so it's easier sometimes to go, okay, this doe milks 8 pounds, so just under a gallon. And sometimes I'll change my wording based on what I expect my audience to be. If I'm looking for somebody to take an animal that's really going to want to know and kind of recognizes that, okay, this 10-pound solid milker or this buck kid from a 10-pound milk a day milker, that's what I'm getting versus, okay, she's going to milk 200 and or 2,500 pounds this lactation. Like, those things might be a little harder to digest for that normal everyday goat buyer audience versus this is her lactation record. What does 77 pounds in butter fat mean? There's people that it matters to, there's people it doesn't, but can you kind of go, okay, she peaked at 13 pounds this year. Well, 13 pounds is a little more understandable to some. And then, or she's consistently given over a gallon a day. And I actually have my milk test to back that up. But I know that there's, you know, she's a gallon a day milker roughly. So those kind of things, I always try and like be cognizant of who that buyer is, because some things just for your average dairy goat buyer don't necessarily matter. And some things are a little bit more, like I said, niche of what the importance is.
Oh, for sure. And it's a balance, right? You don't want to give too much information where it's going to bore people and they keep scrolling, but you don't want to give too little information where it doesn't excite anybody that might be a potential buyer. Now, this next one kind of goes right with the milk records thing. Don't be that person that makes a crazy post where you're... Don't be the Nigerian dwarf breeder that says that their goat is milking three gallons a day. Okay, let's like just stick to the facts.
Oh my
God. Don't embellish. Well, it's true. You see it every year. Oh, I got this huge milker and they got a tiny udder. And it's like, I don't think you do. But don't embellish on your post. Try to stick to the facts. If you have a just middle grade animal that you think it will be fine for somebody, but just not for you, state that. You know, it's not going to kill anybody. And I can tell you right now, most of my buyers, when they private message me and they ask me what I like or don't like about something, I'm very blunt and very honest with them, because I don't want to gain a reputation of, well, this breeder said this sold me this buck, said that it was going to have the longest four udders in all of the land. And man, those four udders are maybe an inch long on his daughters. So you don't want to be that person. Just stick to what you know for a fact your lines are doing, what you like and what you don't like, and be honest on your posts.
Yes, and I think, first of all, I don't think this is a breed-specific issue.
I was just throwing out just a random thing.
I know, but it happens across the breeds. But you have to realize that there is a lot of value in your reputation as a dairy goat breeder. And you ultimately, in order to have success in continuing to sell animals and market animals, you want to make sure that what you're selling is representative of what is actually there. So when you say it's beneficial to actually say what's going on, it's so true, because if you are saying this animal is a really strong milker, and realistically she's not even making a cup of milk and she's a Alpine doe, and you're going, oh, she's a good milker, this is great, that buyer is then going to take her buck kid who they're taking your word from, and then they use it and all of a sudden they have no milk production and that didn't work out for them. So they're not necessarily going to be comfortable even maybe going to you and buying another animal, versus you saying, All right, there's no milk production here, but if you need a rump, oh my gosh, if she doesn't have milk production, she's not going to have a gorgeous rump, but, or, you know, maybe she will, but who knows, but like, oh, but the rump is beautiful. And then the buyer can decide, all right, well, I'm okay on milk production, but I need a rump. And so let me get this animal and bring him into my breeding program and see what they can do. Maybe I'll lose a little bit of milk production, but what will I gain in terms of other things? So it helps. And I think having a repeat buyer is always a good thing. I mean, first of all, it makes you feel good, but it makes your job easier, because you don't have to reach new customers. They're coming back to you and saying, hey, what do you have available? I want something like this. Or I really like this kid I got from you last year. What do you have this year? And just continuing those relationships and making sure that they're happy with what they get goes a long way to success and ease of marketing in the future.
Yes, and that's beautifully said. I've had quite a few repeat buyers just because I was, well, A, they like the animals they got, but B, I told them what I had and didn't send them down the path that was not true. So going on with our topic here, a picture is obviously worth a thousand words. You can have the longest post ever with the most information, but if it doesn't accompany pictures, people are going to keep on scrolling. It's just the way it is. You need to draw their eye somehow. And that's usually with pictures. So are the pictures you are putting out there presenting the right story for your customer? And what do you do for pet homes or meet buyer posts? Like, what are you doing for with your pictures for your posts for different types of animals?
Whenever I put out a picture, so even if it's just a picture on my Instagram or on my Facebook, I am very cognizant of what is in that picture because that picture is going to stay around for the most part. When people are seeing pictures, they're interacting with them pretty much once and then they're done. They'll give it a like or a heart on Instagram. When a buyer is really diving in and doing research, they're probably going to do a deep dive. They're looking to find that ex-girlfriend from 3 years ago and who her mother is and, you know, what the mother's birth date is. And they're doing a deep dive. They want to see the animals. Sometimes they're even trying to see if, okay, can I get a candid photo of this animal? Because does she really look like that when she's just in the pen? And so you really want to be focused on what is going on in that picture. What is the goat looking like? But also, what is the background looking like? Because even if you are just have the goat in the picture, that background could be very distracting or very telling of what is going on at your farm, and sometimes potentially a little off-putting. If you're not in a very clean space, am I going to be comfortable not knowing you buying an animal that's not in great conditions versus can I take 5 seconds and put an animal in a nice spot and take a picture? Or different things like that are, is there too much going on even that's distracting? So I can't see what this animal actually looks like are big things I feel when you're putting out your pictures.
I think one thing I see a lot is when people are posting pictures of like the rear udder, they're taking pictures, I don't know, 2 minutes after before they milk them out after they just get it and it's gross back there. Like you want to paint a nice clean picture for them and don't want that nasty afterbirth hanging or just bloody discharge everywhere. You just make sure that it's a nice clean picture where it paints a good picture where people aren't, their eye isn't drawn to the yuck, it's drawn to the yeah, wow, right?
Right.
That is a big thing. And multiple angles of that udder, you know, a side view, maybe a fore udder picture. Whenever I'm taking pictures of my animals, or posting pictures, I should say, of my animals, I'll try to put that ear's lactation. But if they have just kitted, like my one post, my doe just kitted, her udder was yucky, you know, not yucky, but it was just didn't look its best. It wasn't super full. I'm not going to post a picture of an udder that's not a good representation of it. So I'm going to post a picture from the previous lactation, where it was at a show, usually when they're in their peak, because that's when you're usually getting a nice picture of their udder is when they're clipped, they're show full, and they look pretty, right? Peak production. And same goes for the pictures of the doe. I'm not going to post a picture of them shaggy. I'm going to have a nice clean picture from when they were at a show the previous year.
Right. But then you're also talking that those posts are geared specifically towards animals you're hoping are going to be going to people who are looking to improve their breeding program, maybe show a goat, etc., like that, versus I have a kid who I need to rehome, whatever the correct word is, and that kid, I need to sell this kid. And what you're going to post for that picture for that pet home, or even I have a bunch of bucks available and I don't have a meat buyer, and I can post to a kind of farm swap site. Those pictures are going to be completely different than what you're going to be posting for when you're looking for kind of that animal to go to, like, say, a show home, a performance home, somebody who's really looking for a solid animal to improve their breeding program. And so I think about, like, pet homes. I just want cute pictures. They don't care what the dam's udder looks like. They're not going to care about the pedigree, and that's all fine. That's what this animal is going to. And there's a huge market. And then, but maybe if you're going more towards homesteading, yes, that mammary system is important because they're concerned about the milk. Maybe that's all you need, a mammary system picture of the doe and then a quick picture of the kid. You don't necessarily need to worry about all the angles of that kid, but, you know, saying solid animal, there's production behind it, and disease testing, because this is what these homes, like, I'm not saying that that's exactly what the homesteaders want, but that's what these people are going to be looking for. And
It's a bonus.
Yes, exactly. And then, but yeah, when you're really trying to sell that animal to its next show home or someone who's going to take that animal and do different things with it, breed it, maybe get it appraised, maybe put it on milk tests, you do want to have good pictures that really highlight the market. I hate taking kid pictures. It's the worst. I can't do it. They look horrible. I don't have the patience for it. So typically for me, because I also feel like kids change so drastically anyway, you're buying that kid on the merits of its pedigree. So you're going to see pictures of the, when it's going to that show home, performance home, you're more likely going to see, maybe I'll get you a good picture if I'm able to really grab them and they're cooperative on the collar, different things like that. Because I know you can take a bottle picture. I can't for the life of me take a bottle picture. It just doesn't work. The kid's head is this way, that way, not functioning. You know, there's a million things there.
Yeah. And the bottle picture, it works well. Is it perfect? No.
Right.
I mean, yes, I think everybody would love to have a picture of a 10-day-old kid on a collar with ears perked forward because somebody got his attention and you've got it shined down and it looks great. But that's, I honestly do like also the bottle picture because, yeah, sometimes their neck's doing weird things because they're fully extended or they're pushing back or they're doing weird things. Their legs are doing weird things because they're just trying to get to the bottle. But I think a picture, a side profile, or even from above shows a lot about the kid. You kind of, because a lot of these people are not, a lot of people transport work. So they're not able to put their hands on. So that side profile and the rear profile at least helps. But you're right. You're painting a picture of what's behind them when they're going to a performance home. So that's why you're adding all that extra data and information. Where for the pets, the pet buyers, the meat buyers, they don't care. Oh, I have an Oberhasli kid. Oh, good. I know it's going to have meat on it, on its bones. So I'll take it, right? But if it's a pet buyer or whatever, homesteader, those cute pictures, those candid pictures go a long way, especially with like a breed like yours, Nubians. Those floppy ears, that cute face, that Roman nose on that little tiny face is what's going to sell it and sell it quick. Yeah. Like you might as well have gone to the store and seen a baby bunny and you're going to buy it right away Easter time because, hey, it's a baby bunny. It's the same deal. So that's just easy. That's like home run. So that I agree with that. That's definitely what I do for my posts whenever I have something that's not going to go to the performance zone.
And I want to just touch on that meat buyer thing, though, meat buyer posts, though, really quick, because you want to mark. So let's say you have a bunch of kids that are going to a meat buyer, and sometimes it's easier to send them to a meat buyer. Sometimes they're taken care of much better than where they could go in a potential pet home, because sometimes you get the crazies. I mean, you get crazies mm-hmm. everywhere, but sometimes you get the crazies who think they want a baby goat and they'll get two, and this is all great, until they realize that there's a lot of work that goes into them. And even when you think you vetted them and they've asked all the right questions, all of these things, plus also the fact of the pet buyers sometimes are going to take more time, and the price you are getting on that kid is not going to be worth your time, versus a meat buyer who, for the most part, if they are buying many kids, are doing it for commercial return. And so what that means is it's beneficial for them to have a healthy animal throughout its lifetime until it gets to slaughter. So they want animals that are not going to get their whole herd of other kids sick. They're not going to want animals that are they're going to have to sink a bunch of medicine into to get them to survive and then eventually get to slaughter. They want those animals to be healthy and well cared for until they get them. And then I think, for the most part, and obviously there's different situations and bad eggs and all of that, but when you look at meat buyers, those animals are being cared for well for the couple of months until slaughter, but that's that meat buyer's job. And that, just like we want to prep our does and make our does productive and make sure they're milking well and then showing well and in good health for that, they want to get these animals to market as fast as possible. And so they're taking care of them to get that there. So I think things you can do to kind of, if you need a meat buyer, to really showcase that, like, hey, I'm a good spot. Like, let's create a relationship. Because once, I feel like once you have a relationship with a meat buyer and they're happy with you, you're happy with them, they just keep coming back because they know you're a good source for these kids. But you want to show that your animals are taken care of, your animals are clean, because cleanliness means most likely you don't have diseases. You don't want to post a bunch of kids with diarrhea, because that means that meat buyer is taking kids with coccidiosis and adding them to their herd and just different things like that. So even if you are trying to catch the attention of somebody like that, and you're on the right platform for that or the right area, showcase that you do have a healthy herd, because that is a marketing thing you have going for you. You may not have the prettiest goats, but you can have healthy, solid animals that can do that job.
And I mean, why wouldn't you shout that from the rooftops that you just got a clean herd, you know?
Right.
Another thing to consider is that marketing is more beneficial or will have a better payoff if it is done throughout the year instead of just at crunch time when there are a bunch of kids to sell. What are you doing throughout the year to build your brand or showcase your herd?
For me, I think there's many facets of this. It is keeping my website up to date with all the different animals. It is having a Facebook and Instagram, which it's very easy to cross post for Facebook and Instagram. So for the most part, if you have a Facebook, you can have an Instagram. Should you be interacting with people on Instagram? Yes, that's a whole nother story, different topic for another day, but it is very easy to have both profiles at the same time. You reach different audiences that way. The other thing is that when I go to a show, I always try and make sure I have my herd sign up, because you go to a fair, yes. You have people coming to this fair and looking at what's around in our area and trying to establish a relationship with a potential seller, because they figure this is a good place to start. They want to start local. They want to have somebody close that they can use as a mentor and a resource as well, and don't necessarily want to spend $1 million for transporting animals. So having the sign that this way they can connect to me and do a quick search, and I pop up on Google for my website, my Facebook page, my Instagram, all different things like that have definitely helped in the past. And then also just being present and around. I just had a bunch of friends come and see the babies, and lo and behold, one of these people had goats growing up, and they don't have goats anymore, but he's like, oh, my father was talking about getting goats the other day. So just kind of being there, there was a potential that some of these buck kids I have right now could be going to them in a couple of weeks. So connecting with everyone throughout the year, whether it's locally, presenting yourself on social media, having a strong website with good search engine optimization, different things like that go a long way towards allowing people to find you and know you to reach out and have purchase animals from you.
That's an excellent point. And I do the same. I think for like show wins and stuff, I treat my farm page and Instagram, although I should get better on Instagram. I kind of lack on there because my audience is definitely stronger on Facebook. But from like my farm page on Facebook, when we go to shows and, you know, I'll put what animals placed what, you know, the highlights and just the regular lights. And that way I can go back and say, what did they do at that show? And I'll go back to that post and I'll be like, oh, okay, let me put that on the website so I can have that for underneath this 2023 information, right? So I use it kind of like a journal, but it's also nice because people are seeing those highlights. When I go to a farm page, because I'm like, oh, that animal's kind of nice, let me go see what they got going on. And I go through their posts. If I'm just seeing old sales posts and maybe like linear appraisal posts or something, or maybe like one big show that they did, I'm getting an idea. But if there's more pictures and more information that I can absorb, I'm going to be drawn to that, right? It's just the way it is. So I try to do the same thing for mine. If I have something cool happen, or even just a day where I'm out there with Alice and Tierney enjoying the goats, I'm going to post something just to kind of keep eyes on my page. So when I do make that for sale post, then people are going to see it on their feed, because the more you interact with a certain page, the more you're going to see it. And that's just, if even if they're not interested in an animal, they might be like, oh, hey, Farmer Fred down the street said they wanted a new Oberhasli buck. Let me show them this post. And that's actually how this buck got sold, the latest one. Like, one of my beat buyer was like, oh, hey, this person might like this. And they shared it to him. And lo and behold, they wanted it. So I think that's just something to remember.
Yes. And the other thing to kind of think about is, and this is a slight digression, but using seasonality and holidays to get the most return for your animals. So I know that right before Easter, there's a giant sale at our local auction, and that sale is always a good sale for prices for your kids. So if you want to take them to auction, be cognizant, watch market reports, so that this way you're getting the most return and you're using auctions as best you can in your pricing strategy. So you're not just taking them and spending so much money on gas to get there and then getting next to nothing for them. You know that there is a market because there's the holiday or people are anxiously looking to get kids. This is the time of year to do it. You can utilize that. I know that's a lot of people take advantage of that Easter market for those unwanted buck kids because they'll keep them for a few extra weeks knowing that you hold on to them and this is when it'll give you the best return. So maybe it's not necessarily direct marketing, but deciding when to put that animal, send that animal to market, no pun intended, is something to think about too. And just kind of playing around with that, watching reports if you're going to send it to auction. Or the other thing is you can play off the idea that you can buy an animal from auction, but it's an unknown. Or you can buy from me and I do this. This is here. You can see my premises, different things like that, whatever you're comfortable with. But you can sell that, the idea of, I'm not unknown. These things are known. You're knowing where this animal came from. So on the flip side, you can use an auction or you can take an advantage of the idea that auctions present an unknown risk and let's be safe in your selection. And there's a value to that as well. So two different sides of auction stuff that just things to think about for when you're and how to utilize an auction.
Make sure you keep an eye out for Taco Tuesday specials.
Yeah.
Well, let's flip the script a little bit here. What has been the things that have made you pull the trigger, especially with goats? Like, is there any, if you've ever bought a goat from a post, like, what are the things that drew your eye?
The last time I bought an animal via a for sales instead of like putting a reservation down and hoping for a buck was that this animal's, it was just the idea of, hey, this animal's available. And I'd actually just seen his sister at a show and they posted the picture of her winning at the show plus his pedigree and stuff. But sometimes all it takes is that, hey, this is available. And at the time I was looking for a buck and it just kind of worked out. But I don't think I saw a picture of him. I might have asked for a picture of him. I don't even remember if I saw him or not until I purchased him. But it was that this is available here. And the sister, like I said, she might have even been best of show at the show we had just attended. And so there was a picture of her. And I was remembering that I really liked that goat. And that next weekend, all of a sudden, this buck came for sale. And I had to jump on it because I had seen his sister and I knew who she was and what she was doing. And then I was able to dive into that pedigree a little bit more and see that I liked his dam and all of those things as well. But I think sometimes you have to remember you got to put out what's available because otherwise people are not going to know. It's basic, but it's important. What about you?
I've never purchased an animal from a post, but I have been drawn to farms because of their posts and then kind of deep dive from there and made informed decisions by what they had to offer on their website, their Facebook page or whatever, and talking to the breeder. But that gateway was opened by looking at their Facebook or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I've treated it. Yeah, I think the best thing you can do is open up the blinds for people to see through and look at your program instead of, oh, the last post was from May of 2022 and we're in March of 2023. So I guess we'll have to wait and see if they post, if they have anything, right?
Right. Well, because nobody knows, first of all, if you're even still in GOATS, but what you have, what you're doing in your program. And so often, and this is a good thing, is we don't want to, we as breeders and buyers do not want to have to ask for a breeding list. We want to see it first. And I mean, half the time I'm asking for recommendations on that breeding list, but I don't want to have to say, okay, can you send me your whole list of your goats and who they're bred to and all of that information? Because I want to take the time and say, okay, ooh, I like this one, or ooh, these lines won't cross with mine. And then let me ask, let me double check and say, okay, this is what I'm looking for. I would like a buck that does X, Y, and Z. So I was thinking this one. Is this who I want to go for? But not having that information readily available is just going to hurt, because you don't know, you as the customer do not know what's there. And it's a lot easier if they have a starting point, and it helps you as well because it saves you time. You're not going, okay, I have 20 goats. These are who's bred to who. Here's this story. Here's this story. Here's this. It's no, it's here. They can see and they can reach out to you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Opens up the conversation for sure. Okay. Last question. Yeah. I guess it's not even a question. I think it's more of a public service announcement here. Stop devaluing the dairy goat. Take pride in your efforts. And what I mean when I say that is I've even come to the realization this year that I am selling my animals for less than they probably should be going for. And I think I'm stuck in the rut of Hilaire Farm from 2 to 3 years ago to where we're at now. And it's, I just haven't upped the prices. And with the cost of feed, hay, and everything in between that we do for these goats, if you have a good quality animal, you should probably look at your prices and see if they're where the market should be.
There is such a value in the dairy goat. They are a great, efficient source of milk. They are a great, efficient source of protein, even if you're going to, you know, selling kids for meat, those things. They don't take as much space as a cow does. There is a huge back to the farm movement going on right now. People are really concerned still about where they get their food from. And you look at how many places are selling chicks, and they cannot keep these chicks in stock. And everybody wants chickens because they are concerned about their feed source. They can justify spending the price for chicken feed versus just buying eggs from the store. They realize that the quality is better, whatever it is. But goats are very similar. There is a huge market for that easy, which not that goats are easy to keep, but that easy access to good foods. And that can be the dairy goat. So there's a value just in that. Plus, then you start going, okay, I show my animal. I focus on confirmation. Well, success in the show ring is designed based on the idea that we are breeding goats that are going to be productive over and functional over a lifetime. And so that all ties in to selling points for your animal and why this animal is important for somebody's program. And we spend all this time and money into these animals, and to turn around and sell them for what we would get, we would get more if we take them to auction, is not necessarily how it should be done. So take a moment and realize that there is a value in these animals, and your pricing should justify that.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap it up, Danielle. Did you want to add anything before we close out the show?
Just what size t-shirt are we ordering here?
I guess we'll see. Probably size fat guy.
Oh, okay. Don't say that.
But yeah, it's not looking great. So thank you for reminding me once again. While I had a few moments of bliss not thinking about it, now I have to think about wearing that darn shirt and the possibility of having to show a Nubian. So cool.
I didn't say you keep adding to this. I mean, I know we have to wrap.
You can't wear the shirt and not have a picture of whatever co-host loses with that breed. You can't.
All right. I mean, I'm just saying you keep adding. All I needed was, you know, to when I won was just you showing your Oberhasleys rocking the I'd rather be showing a Nubian shirt. But if you want to show Nubians too, I'm sure we'll bring one that you can show. It's fine. We'll make it work.
Perfect. Great. Well, guys, for everybody listening, we do have some social medias that we like to plug. But of course, I want to state that we are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcast. Please do leave us a review, 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever you want to give us, whatever you like or dislike, please leave us a review. It really does help the algorithm. I know it's very annoying to go into that app and spend the 3 minutes to say awesome things about Danielle and a couple of mean things about me. So please do take the time. We also have a website and socials. And Danielle, where can they find that?
So you can find our website at dairygoatpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast, on Instagram, Ringside_goat_podcast. And you can find us on TikTok by searching Ringside Podcast.
Perfect. And thank you again to the Great Goat for sponsoring this episode of Ringside. And yes, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
Make sure you get new clippers for your blades. We'll catch you on the next one.
Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.